Welcome to The Aesthetic Report, a podcast for skincare professionals who want to grow in their careers by hearing directly from the individuals who have been there, done that, and are paving the future of their industry. Join us for the latest in all things skincare, beauty, wellness, business, and more. From interviews with leading experts to the burning topics on your mind, The Aesthetic Report starts now.
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to The Aesthetic Report, a podcast by Dermascope. I am your host, AIA President and Director of Education, Michelle D'Allard-Brenner, and I am thrilled, as I always say every single month, to be here with everybody. It's so great to have the opportunity to connect, to share some stories, and to do exactly what The Aesthetic Report is all about, and that's making connections to those that have been in our industry that have made, have done, are doing great, new, exciting things and kind of leading the way because our industry just changes every single day. And this episode, again, really excited to have another amazing guest. And today's guest is a legend. I love that word, legend, but an AIA legend to be exact, but truly a legend. His career spans over 40 years, a past president of AIA, and has consulted for over 450 salons and spas. He is an author, a speaker, a career coach, a business owner, you name it. Douglas, I think you've done it. Douglas Preston, thank you for being with us. You have done it all, haven't you? Just about.
What I haven't done would get me in trouble. So so I pass on some of these things.
That's awesome.
Otherwise,
that's
yes.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, to reflect back over 40 years in the beauty business and to tick off all of those things you've done, I mean, wow. Would you ever have thunk?
Well, no. When you're starting a new business or a new career, it's pretty much day by day. And I wasn't a dreamer. I was always a practical kind of person who thought, okay, well, where am I now? And how can tomorrow be better? Rather than having lofty dreams. Although I did have one. And that was when I first began working as an esthetician back in 1981. And I didn't have any clients yet. I had a Dermascope magazine. And I was looking through it. That's when Dermascope had their independent shows. And I saw all of these luminaries, right, who were the speakers at the trade events. And you have your little picture there, right, with the person's bio and what they're going to talk about. And I thought, God, I'd love to be one of those people one of these days. And I think Dermascope was the first show I spoke at some years later.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I have a similar recollection of flipping through and looking at the articles and the pictures and then the speakers and thinking, oh, someday.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then you get to a point where you've written so much and done so many, you're like, oh my goodness. So Douglas, let me take you back a little bit. And I mean, you sort of pivoted from a psychology background into beauty and fashion. I mean, how'd that shift happen?
The thought that what I wanted to be was a family psychotherapist and also a researcher in that field. And I was headed in that direction. But what I found was that when I was doing my internship and working with people who are in crisis, what I was really thinking about was how they looked and not what they were saying. I'm a really visual guy, you know? And I thought, maybe your problem is that outfit. And when I realized that my focus was really not on the problems, but on structural things, you know, whether it was architecture or fashion, beauty, makeup, hair, all of those things, you know, I wasn't reading Psych Today. I was reading the fashion mags. And I just had to come to a realization to say, what is going to sustain me for a long-term career? And I realized that it would not be psychotherapy. It would be beauty, which is kind of the same thing in the end.
Yeah. And then made that shift. Makeup artistry was that initial shift into beauty?
Well, it's a funny story in a way, because I decided that makeup was of interest to me. And my girlfriend at the time taught me to do her own makeup a little bit, right? And I thought, well, this is fun. So I went to a makeup store to buy some makeup brushes to get my own. And the owner was in there and one of her salespersons. It was an independent makeup store. The owner was wrapping up the brushes and she said, are these a gift? And I said, no, they're for me. And she said, "You're a makeup artist?" And I just said, "Yeah, right. Yes, I am.
Of course I am."
Right. Eventually. Well, this wound up with me with an interview to do a practical interview for a job at this store. I don't know anything about makeup, right?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I know that mascara doesn't go on the lips, right? And that sort of thing. So I did a crash course with my girlfriend. 3 days later, went to the store, did my interview, and made up the girl that was, you know, the employee. And I'm sweating bullets, right? I'm just so nervous because I thought, oh my God, this is a disaster. And when I was finished, I stepped back. The girl's looking at herself in the mirror. The owner's looking at her face, stunned. And she looks at me. This is the truth. And she said, "You have so much to teach us." And I got the job.
And for
6 months, I did like the same face on women over and over again, just changing it a little bit. And that's how I learned to do makeup.
That is fantastic. Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because I am a firm believer. And again, having been in the aesthetics business as long as we both have, but there are certain things in our profession that are a gift. Waxing and makeup are two of them. You're either great at it and you love it, or you're awful at it and it's just not your thing. And yeah. I can tell you hands down, I'm an excellent waxer. So that speaks volumes about the makeup, but it's a gift. That's fantastic. That's a great story.
Well, there's many of them.
You know what, though? It's really great because, you know, when you go back to an era of, you know, not that the beauty business hasn't always been around, it has. But when you go back to the 80s and even the early 90s, that's when it really started to explode. The skincare business, the beauty business really started to divulge and emerge away from cosmetology and become its own animal.
I would agree with you.
And look where we are now.
Yeah, it sort of began in the Christine Valmy, Robert Diemer days, right? And others, I should say. But that's when really there became more of a distinction between the disciplines from really hair and makeup and skin. Nails fits in there somewhere, but it's not the same thing. And so, yeah, it really began to develop its own face, no pun intended, and is, you know, still on that trajectory today.
Douglas, with all of the things that you have done and as you've evolved in this business, at what stage did the business part of it become what makes a good business, what makes someone successful, and that shift of helping people on that aspect as opposed to the hands-on with the client part of it?
Well, the business part of it to me was just kind of horse sense. You know, it's money in, money out, what's left, right? And for so many of us, there wasn't much left, if anything. So we had side jobs while we were developing our first businesses. It was a lot of work, but that's fine. Where it really happened, it was a show in Dallas, and I think it might have been an ice spa show, an early one of those. And I was in a big auditorium with a lot of spa owners, and I had one at the time, not as big as it got, but certainly. And the discussion was on fair compensation for employees. And they had a wireless mic that was going around the room, and different owners were standing up and saying, "Well, this is what we pay our employees because we want to pay fair." And everybody would applaud, right? And the people who spoke, "Well, this is what we believe and this is what we believe." And I finally got the mic and I said, "You know, I'm really excited to hear about all of these stories about fair pay for your employees." I said, "I just have one question. How many of you owners are getting paid fairly?" And it was silence and then a nervous laughter. And I said, "That's what I thought." I said, "My intention isn't to take over this conversation, but if any of you want to talk about the meaning of fair pay and how to distribute that equally among owners and employees, meet me out in the lobby after this." And 75 people showed up.
Wow.
And suddenly I was a business consultant.
That's awesome.
And have been ever since.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you know what? So let me ask you, what prompted you to even make that statement? What was it that you were doing or saw that prompted you to make, because that's a pretty bold statement.
That's
a pretty bold statement.
To me, in business, it's one of the only things that really makes sense, unless you're a philanthropist and you're working just because you need something to do and the money's not important, then this is critical. And so having seen all of these success stories published in magazines, you know, and other things, I would think, what is the story behind the story? Because I know that my place was getting pretty famous, but I knew how thin our bottom line was. This whole thing about being paid fairly, you know, I want to be paid fairly. I want to pay fairly. So this term fair to me was an unknown. It's like, well, what does that mean? What is fair pay for somebody? And then if it's fair for the employee, well, what about the owner? What's fair for you, right? So in other words, to me, fair pay was everybody is getting paid fairly for their contributions. And it seemed to me that the last people that were getting paid fairly were the owners, given all the hours, the risk, the debt, the headache, all of that, right? Yeah. So it became an open question on a subject that seemed to have an answer, but nobody could really pull it up. So I wanted to define that. And that sort of became the basis for really all of the work I've done subsequent to that time.
That's awesome. Even as you said that, and having been now a business owner for over 20 years, I'm actually not even sure if you were to ask me to define fair pay, is there a ratio? You know, is there an equation that works out what that fair pay is? That's a tough question. It's a tough question.
To me, the definition of fair pay, it follows along two lines. One is what is acceptable to either person, whether or not it even has a foundation in fact, right? Or makes sense, right? But usually it's, I feel good with this, right? And the other thing is whether or not the operation is sustainable. So if you're an owner, you have to say, okay, here's what I've done. This is what I've gotten. Is this worthwhile? And that based on the kind of life I want to live, the security I'm going to need in retirement, the equity that I need to build in this place, the 80 plus hours a week I devote to this thing, right? You own a business, you're thinking about it 7 days a week, and thought is work. And so, you know, if we're really looking at fair and you add it all up, and then, of course, if you're a business owner, you must not think like a wage earner.
Yeah.
Because you'll jump off a bridge.
And you won't have a business, most likely.
Yeah. Which could be a good thing.
Right. No, that's true. And I'm a firm believer, you know, back to the makeup and the waxing. Certain people are meant to be business owners and certain people are not.
You're right. And I think it depends on how you define it, right? I mean, you're a business owner if all you're doing is taking assignments to do wedding makeup on weekends, right? You got to go there. You got to show up on time. You have to do a good job. You have to decide how much that's going to cost. You have to make sure your client pays you. And then at the end of the day, is this good enough? Those are just kind of the basic bones of a business. It gets real complicated when you start expanding and hiring and so forth.
Today's conversation, I was so pumped to have this opportunity to chat with you because given everything that's gone on in the last couple of years and the shifts in how we've all had to figure out, first of all, how to keep our businesses running, how to keep them successful. But I believe in our industry also, not only have we seen an influx of people coming into the beauty industry, but Douglas, we're seeing an influx of people who want to own their own businesses. Actually, and I shouldn't even say just our industry, kind of across the board. People want independence. They want flexibility. They want all of those things. And they don't realize everything that goes into it until you're all of a sudden there and you're like, oh, what have I done?
Exactly. I take such a different view of things than many people that are out there in business. When you look at businesses that fail, which is most of them, business failure, do you realize, is actually better for the economy than business success? You have to look at it this way. It's sort of organic, or it's like nature. Right? If you look at salmon that spawn in a stream and they lay their eggs way upstream, right? They lay millions of eggs. Only a tiny bit mature to adulthood. All the rest are eaten by everybody else. The same thing is true for entrepreneurs, right? Oh, hey, I'm going to open a day spa. So you see a space, right? You sign a lease and you pay a bunch of money. Then you hire contractors, right? And they put all this stuff in. Then you buy your equipment, you hire your employees, and you take on your marketing and all these expenses that are upfront, hundreds of thousands of dollars in many cases. And then 2 or 3 years later, you're dead. But while you did this thing, right, you were the salmon that laid all these eggs, and all these eggs basically is money into the economy. Well, you died, but everybody got fed, right? And there is always new entrepreneurs coming in. So actually, entrepreneurs who are spending lots of money, whether it's borrowed or, you know, capital they already have, dumping it into the economy actually fuels the economy more than a mature business that steadily buys a little bit of stuff all year long. So while we don't want to be one of the eggs that get eaten, that is how the economy actually works. It's natural and it makes sense. It's just that you try to survive. But failure is necessary for a healthy economy.
Yeah, that's a fabulous analogy. I mean, even if you, you know, failure is necessary in life in order to succeed somewhere. In something. That's fabulous. So looking at that, how have your own personal and financial setbacks during your career impacted the way that you help others?
Oh,
I know.
Oh my God, that's a big subject.
So you screwed up, Douglas. How did we benefit from it?
Most of the financial setbacks I had were due to relationships of trust that did not wind up that way in the end. I'm not going to go into specifics, but they're very, very poignant in my mind. And each time that it happened, my entire income was cut off and always a shock. So at that point, this is really where the successful and the non-successful divide, right? When something that dramatic happens to me, I take about a day to suffer. Maybe I drink a couple of bottles of wine. Maybe I feel sorry for myself. Maybe I call a best friend. Sometimes you cry, sometimes you rage, right? And then you stop and you do something. And when I'm consulting with people, I do this very same thing. I tell them, we need to make a list of your assets because right now you think you don't have anything to go on. So we look at their assets, whether it's parts of their personality, people they know, skills that they have, experience, you know, that they can run a computer, all these things we list. And they look at that and say, my God, I actually have a lot. It's like, right. So all we have to do is coalesce this into a plan of going forward. I do that for myself. And every time I've done it, I've come out better. And right now, my career has never been better. It's just phenomenal. I make more money than I ever did. But one, two, three times, I lost it all. And it was hard. I used to own some property in New Mexico. And on my property, you'd see these ant hills. They were like these cone-shaped ant hills. And these ants are pretty destructive in some ways, in other ways they're not. But I accidentally kicked one over one time when I was walking my dog. Actually, I caved it in. And the first thing that happens is these ants go crazy. They start running around in circles, but instantly, they go into repair mode. They start building it again. And it doesn't take long. It's fast. And suddenly, they're moving the rocks back into the right positions. And I watched that one time and I thought, God, that is so brilliant. They don't waste any time. They know what they want to do. They do it again and they just do it. And I thought that's the best advice you can give anybody. But you have to know what you're looking for. It's like if your house burns down, right? If your house burns down, very few people ever rebuild the exact same house. What do? They put in things that they wanted all along. Now they can. So you're not going to put that old kitchen back there, and you're not going to put that wall up that you wanted to tear down, and you will add a new bathroom, right? So in a way, it's an opportunity. That's how I see calamity. And it's always the old saying, landing on your feet, right? But with a mouse in your mouth. And it's like, it's just
love that.
It's love just that. A little bit better each time. Now, I don't want any more because I don't need it to get better again. But that worked. And that is the best approach I can tell anyone. Just get at it.
I love that. I admire that. I respect that. And I'm thrilled that you said that because I believe our listeners need to hear that, that failure is an opportunity for growth to do whatever you did and do it better instead of just throwing your hands up in the air and saying, oh, I can't do it and to be done with it. Did you know the association responsible for the creation of Dermascope turned 50 this year? To celebrate this milestone year, we have relaunched Aesthetics International Association, or AIA, to be better than ever. AIA members now have access to exclusive educational content through the print magazine, digital archives, and on-demand webinars from leading experts. But the benefits don't stop there. AIA also offers access to customizable insurance plans at group rates through PPIB, business and product discounts, and so much more. Sign up today to unlock the possibilities for only $6 a month. Become an AIA member at dermascope.com/AIA. That's dermascope.com/AIA. Douglas, let me ask you, what sets two people apart? What sets the person apart that is like yourself and says, you know what, I'm going to have my wine. I'm going to wallow in my sorrows for 24, 48 hours, and then I'm going to rebuild that anthill. As opposed to the individual that is just like, can't do it, done and over with. Are there a couple traits or characteristics that you, with all of your years watching people do this, could identify?
I can't pinpoint the exact characteristic because I don't know what it is in me. But if I go back in my own history, I grew up in an impoverished family. We were a welfare family. My personality was always aesthetic. I needed privacy. I needed beauty around me from my earliest age that I can remember. And for much of those years, I slept on a sofa because it was the only room that was private. And it was big, and I liked it. I had it to myself. And at night, I would lay on my back in my little bed, and I would dream about the life I was going to have as an adult. And it wasn't going to be this one. So I promised myself that life would always be better than this. And no matter what happened, I was going to have a nice outcome. And that's always been true. So that was a self-commitment. Now, where does that come from? I have no idea. But some people have victim personalities, for example. Some need lots and lots of help and support. They need a heavy hand to guide them along. And I think mostly it just has to do with personality, some experience in there, and then what you think you're capable of. But what that magic quality is, I really don't know because I can't say what it is in me. It surprises me, but it's always been true. So align yourself with people who are like that. Right. And then they can give you some encouragement to show you how they went along. At least the example could be helpful.
One of the things that I will often say to students or individuals in situations is nobody has the answers except you. No one has the answers except you. You can ask a million people, but when you start following everybody else's recommendations and suggestions, you've just lost you.
You know, I think you have to step back one element from that. And I totally agree with you. The other thing is, do you have the right questions? Because, you know, it's like, why does this happen to me is not a good question.
You're right.
So, you know, it's like, well, because you're a loser, right? So now what are we going to do? But it's like, okay, this happened to me. What's the best way out of it? Well, then the next question is, what do you want? You know, there's two kinds of motivators. There's what we call a negative motivator and a positive motivator. A negative motivator used to be the thing years ago when girls would marry anybody just to get out of the house, right? Because they hated being home. That's a negative motivator. That's a, I got to get away from this, so I'll go to that, whatever comes of it. Positive motivator is, there's where I want to be. So I'm going there because it's a good thing, not because I'm trying to get away from something. And so when you have positive motivators that are directed by desires, that's a better way to be motivated. Then the questions follow.
Yeah.
What should I do? What should I not do to get in my way? Who should I talk to? Who are the best examples to look at? If I see an example of success, how can I prove it's real? Those are things that shine the light on the direction that can get you somewhere, at least better than where you are. And then the rest becomes evident as you go along.
So Douglas, let me ask you then, you've worked with so many individuals, so many business owners, whether it's spa, salon owners, independent contractors, what could you say would be some of the most common or the largest hurdles that you have seen solo practices have to overcome getting off the ground?
Well, I'm often asked what's the most important skill an esthetician can have in business. And I tell them it's patience, because without that, nothing else can happen. So you have to be patient. You have to understand how a business grows, how organic that is. You know, everybody gets, they get their esthetician's license and they open a place and they say, where are all the customers? It's like, it's kind of late to ask that, but you're in this situation. So where are the customers? Somewhere. That's where they are. And when you look at this thing for what it is, I did some surveys a number of years back and I've done many of them. This is something I bring forward from my psychology background when we had to do field studies. And talking to women in random settings, right? And you ask them, okay, how many of you get your hair done by a professional? It's pretty much everybody. How many get your nails done by a professional? It's quite a few. How many of you get waxing or, you know, and things like that? How many of you get a facial every month? Nobody, practically, right? When I'm at trade shows, I ask estheticians, how many of you guys got a facial every month and paid for it before you became an esthetician? And everybody laughs. I said, see what I mean? Now, if you didn't, what do you expect of the public? So the point is that, which wheels back to patients, the regular aesthetics customer, that facial customer that comes in regularly and buys products from you is a very, very rare bird. They really are, given the population as a whole. So don't expect them to line up outside your door, even if you've, and, you know, and if you've got a Groupon thing going, you know, I'm sorry, but that person's interested in a deal. They're not interested in the commodity. So that feels good to them, right? I asked a friend of mine, what's your favorite restaurant? She said, the ones that take coupons. It wasn't the food. It was the deal. That's what tastes good to them.
Right.
Right. Okay. So it's the same thing. So when you're talking about estheticians, of course, it matters where you locate. It matters your message, what the place looks like, your skill sets. But first and foremost, you have to get your name out there. You have to get in the local lexicon for people to know who you are. That takes time. And if you rush into this and you need to make money immediately, that's probably the biggest mistake they make. They're not funded for the long haul. And so, you know, they fail.
Yeah. It's not necessarily open it and they will come. That is really not the case.
Well, if you're giving away free food.
Well, right. Yes. Yeah. But when the food's gone, they're gone. That's
right. That's the loyalty.
Yeah. So in the years of helping all of your, doing your consulting and working with spas and salons, and I know we don't want to show favoritism and actually may not even be a favorite, but what would be one of your most memorable salon or spa experiences or cases as a consultant?
It's actually how I got a job. You know, I've gotten so many jobs by crazy accident, like that one with the makeup job.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, it was a big corporation. Anybody would know them. It's a makeup company that decided that they were going to roll out a bunch of day spas nationally. I was on a CNN report one time that head of Estee Lauder Spas, the president of Elizabeth Arden Red Door, and me somehow, how did I get on this thing, right? And they were asking about the day spas. Red Door was going to do a big rollout. Lauder was going to do a big rollout. And then they get to me and they say, what do you think about this day spa phenomenon? And I said, it doesn't have a future. It's like, what? I said, it's overwrought. It's overblown. We're taking things that people like to do on a small scale and putting it into a castle, right? It doesn't make sense. So there is a way to do it, but most people don't understand it. And they're going to fail. So anyway, I said, stick to your knitting. Anyway, these two people come to New York from New York to Los Angeles to meet me to talk about consulting for their rollout, right? And I pick them up at their hotel. This is the before GPS.
Oh.
And the woman executive, she's 8 months pregnant and she's feeling really sick. And they're both tired. They've been on a long plane trip. They're hungry. They want to get to the restaurant. I've set this up. I get lost in Los Angeles. I drive them through every bad neighborhood out there. Frightening. We're an hour and a half late for dinner. They're miserable. And I'm trying to put a good face on this, right? Like, hey, well, guys probably didn't expect a tour of the underbelly of Los Angeles, but I thought you might enjoy it, right? And so thinking, God, this is such a disaster. We keep calling the restaurant to get them to hold our reservation. We finally get there. They eat. They look awful. So they tell me what their interest is, right? And this is where we're at, right? We're having some difficulties and we're looking for the right person to help us out. So I told them what I thought I could do. And at the end, the fellow who had arranged us, he said, okay, well, thank you for your time. Write us a proposal and send it out. And I looked at him and I said, no, I'm not writing your proposal. This is the truth, the honest truth.
Really?
No, I'm not going to get this job after what I did. Have you ever written a spa turnaround proposal? It's like 20 pages of details, right? Hell no. And most of those don't go anywhere. They just scrap paper, right? That's business. I said, no, I'm not writing it. I said, I'm not going to send you anything. I said, I think I've given you enough to take back to your team. And, you know, if it doesn't work out for you, I understand. So, you know, it's like, why work more, right? I get the job.
Oh, my God.
This is honest truth. They call me
Douglas.
Back. About
five.
They hired me. And I literally asked this guy, I said, how on earth did you choose me after what I put you guys through? He said, you know, on the face of it, there's no good reason. He said, but you conducted yourself with such control and coolness in the face of what was really an awful situation. And we thought, man, if this guy can do that, maybe he can help us out. Honest truth.
Classic. That's
and the next
awesome.
Thing I know, I'm in Trump Tower just before 9/11 trying to help this company.
That's awesome.
2 days with them. And I told them to put it to sleep, give it a shot, put it to sleep, shut this whole operation down. And they did.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because after 2 days with them, it was hopeless. Yep. I said, stick to your knitting, which is retail.
Yeah.
Go in the yep. service business, for God's yeah. sake. Yeah, and Red Door will be sorry too.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
You know, it. Just, yep. yeah, yep. I have lots of those stories.
That's great. But you know what that sounds like? That's one of those go with your gut instincts. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know your thing, do what you know, stick with it and go with your gut. And I have said that for years and years and years to people. Never, ever. Ever was there a person who said, oh, damn, I shouldn't have gone with my gut. Nobody ever says that. Nobody ever says that. That's no. a great story.
Yeah,
that's
funny.
A great story. Yep. So let me make a little shift and I'm going to kind of circle back to this eventually, but
sure.
your comedone extractor.
Oh, yeah.
You got like a hot new version. I mean, seriously, Douglas, of all of the things I'm reading, I'm like, oh my gosh. So tell us about it.
It's another one of those stories. I'm telling you, my life is just peppered with these accidents.
I love it.
Second year in aesthetics, I have all the extraction tools that we have today. They're all the same. They haven't changed in four decades, okay? But but they're not doing what I want them to do, particularly with closed comedones and particularly closed comedones under the neck. How do you get those things out of there? It's really hard. And it's sensitive skin, right? Visiting a dermatologist who's a colleague of mine, and I see a tool on his tray. And it's actually a cutting tool. It was a lancet and has a certain shape to it, like an arrowhead. And I'm looking at that thing, and I thought, I wonder if that was curved, but it had an edge on it, if I could use it as a pressure tool, sort of like on the bobby pin theory, right? That people would use, like they use a hairpin to press out a blackhead, but it needs to be sharper, more precise, and open-ended. Anyway, he gave it to me, and I tried to bend that thing to get it to work right. And I ruined it, of course. And also, it's razor sharp, right? It's a cutting tool. It's a lancet. So I'd have to dull it. And then anyway, so he told me how to buy more of those. And they're not cheap. So I bought about a dozen of them, and I ruined all those. And I was just about to give up, and I accidentally figured out a way to create this shape. And it was just what I thought might work. And then I had to create a method, right, for using it. And I did that. And I had this tool that was working phenomenally well. Okay, so now I have a great tool. And that's all there was going to be to it. And my working partner. So I made two of them. And then later on, we got some employees, right? And we trained them how to use that tool. And, you know, they don't stick around forever. So like, can I get one of those? I said, well, sure. So I'd sell them one. They're indestructible, which is the worst thing about it. I wish it would wear out in a few
right.
years, right? As a seller, but they don't. But it's a third-party tool, right? It's made by a company in Germany, and I'm altering it, and then I'm selling this thing, which I probably shouldn't be doing. So anyway, this goes on for years and years, right? And every now and then, I'd sell maybe a dozen of these a year. It was a cult item. Every now and then, someone would call me, yeah, I'll give you one. So what happened was we decided, my wife and I, that we're going to get out of this business. You know, I'm not selling very many of them. It's a third-party tool. I don't need it. So I put it out on the internet in my groups that, okay, this is 2019, I said, okay, if you guys know about this tool, I want to let you know if you want one, it's a September. By the end of the year, they're gone. There won't be any more. Well, sales exploded. So
social media for you.
Yeah. So now I'm ordering and doing lots of these. I thought, no, I can't keep doing this, right? We got to stop. So I was told that I would never find a manufacturer in the US who could make something like this. But I thought, you know what, I'm going to try again. So I hired a CAD designer, sent him the tool, told him how I wanted it changed because it was an end on it. It has a cup and hole in, which I don't like. So let's take that off. Let's extend the handle. But getting this curved end is going to be hell. So he did a CAD design and he hooked me up with a guy in back east who worked with a manufacturing company. And they took the CAD design, they took the prototype of one of the ones that I used to have. Long story short, it took a year, but we got it. And wow. Not only that, it works better than the original and it's made in the USA.
That's awesome.
So I was able to bring the manufacturing home, trademark it, put our name on it, USA's on it. And we sell tons of these. And so now we're looking for international distributors. I may even open it up for regular consumers because it's, you know, any pro tool that's in our market, a consumer can buy.
Sure.
Anything.
Sure.
And so the question is, whose hands is it in, right?
Right.
And only
right.
a professional can really make it work right. You could do everything for your own hair if you want. Shears, right. color,
yes, you can.
Any of it, right? Don't try
right.
it.
Right. No. Right.
But you can buy it, right? So that's how I feel. It's like, you know, it's like, yeah, you can try this thing out, but it's only going to really work in the hands of a professional.
Of a professional. Douglas, that's great. So where can you get it? The shop section on your website? Is that... Yeah.
I have a hybrid website. It's two things. So PrestonSkinCenter.com yep. is my kind of landing site. And that is really for my skincare clinic here in Los Gatos, California, which I still run. But on the menu bar, when you get there, there's a selection on the menu bar at the top that says skincare professionals. And that is the professional area. So when you go into that, all of the professional side of the business is there. That's my training programs, consulting, and my store, which has training programs, tools, etc. And the extractor is there.
That's awesome. I have to tell you, I was on your website doing my homework, and I love everything that you have available, all of the business content and the training materials.
Thank you.
I honestly love it because, you know, there's a huge need for it. And even as a school owner and the hours that we spend on business and retailing and those types of things, you know what, when you get out there, you're still like, where do I go? Where do I turn? Douglas, you've got some fantastic information there for people that are looking to, well, for what you do. Help me with my business. You know, where do I go and what do I do? You've got some great, great material. I mean, you've done a fantastic job with that, I have to say.
I really appreciate that coming from you, Michelle. And the educational programs I have, again, it wheels back to my psychology days. It's based on the psychology of the customer, not on what we want them to do or think they'll do. It's based on what they actually do, how they perceive our actions, how they interpret something that we say, like in terms of sales, right? People are always afraid to sell. And I said, no, you don't have to be afraid of that because you don't sell. The customer does the selling. A sale is nothing more than taking an item and describing it in a way that excites the buyer or potential buyer, and they work up the enthusiasm to buy it. And then they want it, right? So the sale happens in their head. It doesn't happen by virtue of you doing something to make them do it. Right. So the responsibility is theirs. In fact, you could even say, well, you know, I just want to describe it to you. You can't buy it. And they'll be upset.
That's right.
I want it.
Yeah. Well, look what happened with your extractor. There's only so many available. And now look.
That's right. It's crazy.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah. But again, it was kind of a happy accident. I love that about life. That's how I met my wife.
Purely by accident?
Mostly.
Yeah. All right. We've got a little time left. Tell me.
It's all about assertiveness. I've been married twice before and I had two lovely wives. I really did. I've been a lucky man in that regard. But, you know, sometimes relationships have a shelf life, you know, and those need it to end. And they're happier without me.
That's a big person to be able to admit that.
It's true. I wasn't ready for that. And they have wonderful husbands now and everybody's fine. But I was creating this new skincare business and I was in a lighting store to pick up an order. And so I'm walking around this lighting store and they didn't have my order ready yet. So I just was walking around. I see this woman in an aisle looking at some lighting. Now, something happens to me sometimes. It's rare, but occasionally where I'll spot somebody and something inside me says, you need to know this person. I don't know what it is, but in the times that's happened, those people have become lifelong friends of mine. But you have to say something, right? So I thought, God, I want to say something to her. There's just something about this person. But I didn't. I thought, nah, she doesn't want to be bothering her, right? And I'm not accustomed to walking up to people saying, hey, hi, how are you doing?
Right.
I'm a little more introverted than that. So anyway, my order wasn't ready still. So I'm walking around again. There she is again. And I thought, I have to say something to this person. So anyway, I walked up and I had a funny little story. I said, how do you pick out a lamp when they've got 50 of them all crammed together, right? She goes, no, that's really true. And I said, are you a decorator? Because she had kind of an artistic look. She goes, oh God, no, I don't know anything about it. She goes, are you? I said, well, Oh, I'm not really, but I'm a hack, but I'm pretty competent. I said, as a matter of fact, look, I've got a problem here. So I show her on my phone these two chairs that I had ordered for my treatment room. You see them on my website. They're these little round lime green chairs. They're beautiful. I said, what's wrong with this picture? She goes, the bases on the chairs don't match. I said, right. I said, that round base is the one it comes with. The cross-shaped base is the one they accidentally sent me. But I like it better. But they won't give me another one. I said... And I said, so I've got this big argument going on with this furniture company. I said, just send me another one. I'll pay for it. They won't do it. And she said, well, what are you doing with all this stuff? I said, I'm opening a skincare business in Los Gatos. She said, oh, what's it called? I said, it'll be called Preston Skin Center. Her eyes pop open. She goes, Preston when? Preston? Which was my very famous day spa that I had, yeah. You know, for many, many years. I said, yeah, I'm that guy. I said, but I sold it off many years ago, but I'm opening a small version. She goes, I just want to kiss your hand. She goes, I love that place. I had gone there for years and years and years, and I have tons of gift certificates. And she said, do you know the nice things that your ex-employees say about you? And I said, really? I didn't hear that. Tell me. So anyway, she goes, well, maybe I'll come to your place. So I give her a card and I said, sure, that'd be lovely, right? And she goes, I'll be gone a few weeks, but when I come back, I'd like to come and see your place. I said, great. So we shook hands and left. I thought, see, I knew there was a connection here, right? So it was so good. I'll have a new customer. And then she called me and said, can I see your place? I said, yeah, I'd love for that. But I said, I've been thinking about you because we had the best conversation. How about having a glass of wine and some food? She goes, yeah. And now we're married.
Oh, I love it.
It's the truth.
I love it. That's a great story.
She's the most marvelous person I've ever met.
Good for both of you. That's fantastic.
But yeah, that's true. That's how
I love good stories. Just that's great.
Another happy accident, you know.
That's
cool, you know, girl. What? Look at that ring. That must be love.
that's love.
Careful where you walk at night.
Yeah. That's love. And you're right. It was the second time around. You know, you figure it out after that.
Oh, yeah. It gets better. The diamond gets bigger.
It does. That's exactly right. Yeah. That's right.
Now I'm too old to worry about it.
Oh, God. Great stories. That's great. So,
life is fun.
It is fun. And you know what? Keeping that in mind is what I truly believe helps people be successful, because success is happiness and accomplishment and whatever makes you feel good. You know, it's just so many things.
Well, it's like a line out of an old Smith song where they said, you can laugh about it now, but at the time it was terrible. It's like, yeah.
That's life. Yep. Yeah. That's life.
So when the worst happens, just think, this is going to be the best funny story later.
Ever. Right. Right. Before we wind up, I actually have a question from a listener of ours that is, what is the best advice or tip for someone wanting to specialize in acne skincare treatments?
Well, first of all, you have to define what that means, because there's lots of different types of acne. I'm more of an acne specialist than I ever intended to be, because as a result of my extraction work and where I moved my business to, there's a lot of families with a lot of money and kids with acne. They don't want them to have it. And they can afford my level of care, right? Which is top end. But if you want to do that, first of all, decide what that means. And then you have to start talking about that. You have to put the word out there. You have to show examples of it. You need before and after photographs of what you do, even if they're stock, right? And you show an example. You have to get used to talking to people. Try to get into schools where you can talk, parents groups, any place where there might be, particularly moms, because adult acne is one thing. Most of the acne work I do is teenage acne. I really don't recommend anybody do just acne, quite frankly. And here's why. First of all, the customer does not buy as much product. And secondly, the goal of the acne client is to never see you again. Like the psychotherapist, right? It's like, right. I'm only coming here for a while. Right. So every year, for example, every year in fall, I lose a lot of my customers to college and they come back during break. But I mean, it's like the Grim Reaper, right? It's like universities. So I don't recommend anybody really focus on that. You know, I have clients that have been coming to me almost four decades. Now that's nice. And these are anti-aging clients. Now, an acne client may attract the mom to your anti-aging table. That's true. But make sure you have that on there. So if you want to do just acne, you can, but you have to be realistic about that customer base, which is that it's evanescent. It doesn't hold up. And so you're really going to be better off if you have a hybrid service. And that's what's on my door, anti-aging and acne specialist. And my practice is about 50-50. And I like it that way.
That's great advice. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, because those are customers that are not coming back. The objective is you help them.
Yeah. Yep. And many of my teenage clients are only here because their parents want them to be here.
Right.
They don't even care.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Right. So yeah, again, you can do it, but you're really working with a much smaller client base than you could. And it's not, in my opinion, it's probably not quite as lucrative. Yeah.
That's great advice. Douglas, is there anything that I've missed? Is there any shout out, anything in particular you want the listeners to know before we go?
I hope it doesn't sound gratuitous, but I want to give Dermascope a big, big thanks. Because my first time on a stage, another funny story I won't go into, but it was because of Will Strunk.
Yeah.
Will heard me do a small speech one time, and he said, you know, I think you're one of the voices of the future. You know, he had a good eye for that. And we became friends, and Pat's friends of mine, and Amanda was just this tiny little baby girl that had the funniest little personality. And look, she runs the show today. Right. And so I go back with these folks, but they gave me a real start here. But to then have been selected as a legend, that is something I would never, ever, ever have expected to get. I really have to thank Dermascope for this relationship for all these years, because I've benefited from it. I love it. I'll always be there for them, even when I, quote, retire, because I believe in the charter of the company. So I'm very grateful to have been selected for the Academy. I still am in shock about it, because unlike where you have these things where it's like, you know, vote for me, right? So to be the best esthetician or the right. best day spa, and all you're doing, it's just a popularity contest. There's no credibility there. I know this, right? Okay, it's cool. And you get to put your plaque on the wall, right? But it doesn't say who you are. Yeah. It says what you did to get it, right? And it really has very little to do with service quality. I didn't ask for this. I didn't apply for this. I didn't petition for it. It came. And when my wife and I heard about this, I was in disbelief. I said, why me of all people, right? When I haven't played the game that I expect that it takes to get such a distinction, this means the world to me. Yeah, I can get emotional over it because it's just like, really?
I can tell.
I got this? Yeah. I didn't ask for this, right? I have to say that it's the best reward I've ever had in all the years I've done this business, financially, credibility, stories, honors, awards, plaques. You know, I've got all those things and I don't own any of them anymore. I throw them away. I don't keep them. And I don't keep them because those things are about what I did, not about what I'm doing. And so I don't want to look at that. I want to look at the space where maybe another thing could be there. And it tells me I'm doing the right thing. And so this one's a keeper, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Douglas, that's like, you almost left me a little speechless, and that doesn't happen too often, but it's beautiful and so well-deserved in so many ways. I mean, everything that you are and have created and represent is really the epitome of success in our business. And it's an honor to have you so involved with Dermascope Magazine. Douglas, thank you a million times over for your time today. It was such a pleasure. And, you know, let's hope our paths cross sometime in the very near future.
Thank you. Oh, I'm sure it'll happen. Yeah, we'll make sure it does. Okay.
That sounds great. You take care of yourself.
Yeah. Thank you for this. Okay.
Okay. All right, everybody, all of our listeners that are out there, thank you so much for your time, for hanging in with us. We love your feedback, your questions, and we'll talk to you all next month. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Aesthetic Report. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you'll never miss an episode. If you love the show, leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and tell all your SD besties to give us a listen. And don't forget, the education doesn't stop here. The Aesthetic Report is one of many platforms offered by Dermascope. Visit dermascope.com for more education and industry news from the authority on professional skincare. Stay tuned, and we'll see you next time for another episode of The Aesthetic Report.